Hello, and welcome to What is Innovation? The podcast that explores the reality of a word that is in danger of losing its meaning altogether. This podcast is produced by Outlast Consulting, LLC, a boutique consultancy that helps companies use innovation principles to solve their toughest business problems. I'm your host, Jared Simmons, and I'm so excited to have Noah Schall. Noah Schall, Business Development Manager at InChange, speaks five languages, has a background in sustainable business, and works within the company's corporate and partner management activities. Noah is also one of the company's master trainers for the circular business game, The Blue Connection, facilitating trainer events, professional programs, university courses, and MBAs. Besides that, Noah is developing experiential learning programs with various organizations around value chain management. As the contributor to the textbook Mastering the Circular Economy and passionate circular catalyst, he is inspiring professionals to go circular in the Netherlands and beyond. Noah, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Jared. Glad to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Thanks for joining us. We at Outlast, we do a lot of work in the supply chain space, and
yeah,
it's just really cool to see some of the things that you all are doing, and I'm excited to learn more about it. I apologize. English is the only language I speak, so you're going to have to stick with that one for the next 20, 30 minutes, okay?
Probably the one I've spoken the most in the past 5 years, so I'll find it.
Okay, all right. What are the other four languages before we dive in?
Well, coming from Luxembourg, I'm Luxembourgish myself, so that's it's an official language by now. I think it was formerly a German accent, but but that's the first one. That's my mother tongue.
Yeah.
Then, Luxembourg is quite a national hub, so you're basically forced almost to learn at least French, and then German is very close, obviously, then to our mother tongue.
Right.
So that's the others, and I'm living now soon 6 years in Netherlands. So that's my Dutch is my fifth language.
Ah, okay, all right. What would number six be?
Probably Spanish. I'm planning on leaving for Spain for a year.
Oh.
In September.
Wow.
And that's hopefully I'll see. Maybe I'll pick up the language. Given that I know French, might be an easy jump, but I'll see. I think I'm fine with five at the moment.
I would bet that number six might come pretty easily to you if you mastered the other five.
So. I'll keep you in the loop.
Yeah, keep you posted for sure. So why don't we dive in? Tell me, in your mind, what is innovation?
Innovation is an improvement of the status quo that makes the world a better place, in my opinion.
An improvement of the status quo that makes the world a better place. That's fantastic. There's a lot in that simple definition. Tell me, what do you define as an improvement?
Yeah, so that's why I linked it to making the world a better place, because improvement for me can be so many things.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, you could define improvement with financial value, with economic value, with social value, with so many things. And if I think the intention is also very important. You might find out that your improvement in the end didn't turn out as you wished for, but that's I think that's also part of innovation. So maybe making the world a better place is maybe even one step too far. Maybe it should even be with the intention to make the world a better place, now reflecting on it. Because yeah, if you think it could go wrong, then you might not innovate and you might miss out. So probably the intention is even more key than the final outcome. Yeah.
Mm. That's a great point. If you're judging yourself by the outcome, then you're less likely to really push the envelope, I think is what you're saying. You're less likely to really push yourself to innovate because you're afraid.
Yeah. And actually that's also very much linked to entrepreneurship in general. I mean, I'm getting all the time these brilliant ideas. You know, since I'm young, I'm always trying to come up with inventions, some stupid, some maybe brilliant. But in the end, it's really not about the ideas as much as it is. It's really about just getting started and trying out. So now talking to you, I think the intention behind the improvement you want to do is really key. Yeah, so I think improvements for me are linked to the intention you have and the outcome you achieve in the end. Yeah.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. Tell me a bit about the status quo. What does the status quo look like?
Well, I think that's very connected to what I'm working in. A big part of my work is working within a circular economy.
Mm.
working with companies and partially also with universities to create circular curricula, courses and trainings. So for me, growing up, the status quo was many times in a linear common economy that the older I get, I also realized what fantastic achievements it has produced. But also what I've learned from early on was that it's many things are going in the wrong direction. So I think status quo would, in that sense, then be too big of a focus on financial terms, on money, for example, as too strong of an indicator with a too narrow focus.
Mm.
Again, this improvement being oftentimes linked to growth and growth only. And while growth is makes sense to some extent, also there's limits to growth. So that's why I think then that's the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to improve it by making the world a better place. So that's then also thinking, okay, how can we do that? And not saying that we have all the solutions already, but there is a status quo. It's to some extent, it's brilliant how we got here. But also devastating if you look mm-hmm. at how narrow-minded it sometimes is structured and how much things need to change to get us on the track, which is sustainable, not only from an environmental, but also I think from a very social and just a well-being point of view as well. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, well said. As you said, the linear economy, you're kind of delineating between the current and antiquated linear economy versus the circular economy that is the basis of your expertise and kind of helping people make that transition. Do you think that, you know, going back to your definition of innovation, there have been a lot of innovative kind of steps along the way to optimize the linear economy. I think it may be that last piece of your definition where you see, an opportunity to take innovation to the next level, where doing those things in the linear economy, people did things to, improve outcomes, make lives better, et cetera, et cetera. But redefining what that better means for the world, I think is where that the circular economy really kind of, it almost feels like the obvious choice. If that's your definition of innovation, if that's part of your solution set, thinking about how to make that transition seems like almost a foregone conclusion.
Good point, yeah.
Can you tell me a bit more about, to our listeners, I mean, I'm familiar with your work, but can you talk to us a bit about what the circular economy is and how it relates to what we know today as the linear economy?
I think you made a good point there. And I mean, to summarize my previous pitch or talk, mm-hmm. the status quo is pretty much the linear economy. And then the idea behind it is that we, in the linear economy, you have resources that you extract. You use them to produce something and to then afterwards have a product that at some point reaches the end of its lifetime and is of no use anymore, which is then considered as waste. And to put it in simple terms, I guess the circular economy would really say, let's say there is no more waste and everything that comes out at the end of product's lifetime is just a new resource. And we have to see how to capture that the value of that resource, not only at the end of the lifetime, actually, but across the whole process, because there's products that are not being used enough or that are breaking down too early because of bad maintenance. There's not only the end of lifetime, but there's of course many things along the way, and at each point there's value to be captured and to be maintained.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is really how can we make sure that value is kept at its highest level, ideally, and once it decreases, how can we recover it and retain it?
Mm.
I think that would be in my few sentences how I would explain it.
Yeah, it's a massive concept to distill into a few sentences, right?
Yeah.
So that's a great synopsis for sure.
Yes, certainly. And maybe to add up on it, just for people who are maybe not as familiar with the topic, I think interesting to know is that there's these two angles, these two worlds, which in the end, they come together, of course, but to just, it sometimes makes it easier to differentiate a bit what circularity is with. There's a technical cycle, so everything that's manufactured. So things that you produce, manufacture, and then afterwards can, reuse, remanufacture, and refurbish, repair, and all those cycles. And then there's also the more regenerative, organic side of the economy and of materials, which are more of on the organic side. So they can be, used as a nutrition for another place for another ecosystem and so on.
Mm.
So that's more on that side of the circular economy. And they of course they are they are part of the same world.
Right.
But I think it sometimes helps to have those two. It's called the butterfly model. It's been developed by the Al McGough Foundation, one of the leading institutions. And
oh,
okay. I think it's just a very nice picture to have those two wings of the butterfly in mind when thinking about the circular economy.
Yeah, that's a great visual to help us novices wrap our heads around it.
Yeah.
So we've talked about what innovation is. In your mind, what isn't innovation?
I think we've already touched upon parts of it. So for me personally, and that's also linked to how I was growing up, innovation is not equivalent to purely financial and or economical improvements. It's because innovation operates within a bigger picture. And that's really what you said as well. That's what I like so much about circularity. It brings everything full circle, pun intended. I like the term that one of my former professors uses. It multi-solves many of the issues we have today, and is that thereby able to convince so many different parties and interest groups and bring them into one boat, which is what we need, I think, to successfully move forward. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I love that phrase, multi-solve.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that. I love that because we talk about multitasking, which is activity bit focused, right?
Yeah.
But multi-solving, I like that a lot because it's much more results focused. You know, you can do four or five things at once that don't add any value or solve any problems.
Yeah.
So I think it's a nice clarification. That's a really cool way of thinking about what innovation isn't. And I'm also hearing sort of in your definition of innovation and what it isn't, I'm also hearing an aspect of one thing you haven't talked about is things needing to be new or needing to be invented. How do you think about those sorts of things? I heard you talk about transferring things from one domain to the next, but is invention part of your definition of innovation?
Oh, yeah, I would certainly say so. So, yeah, definitely. If it wasn't part of my definition, then I would definitely add it. and that's, again, you know, as I remember myself as a young boy inventing a banana peeler, completely trivial, you know, and of course, not an invention. It was just a drawing on a piece of paper. But and then later on, you know, coming up with more interesting ideas, of course. But
yeah.
it always fascinated me, this if you can call the field, this field of invention.
Mm-hmm.
The brilliant idea, and then also afterwards, the brilliant implementation of that idea can really change so many things, which can have a huge impact. So definitely, I think that's a huge part and also very inspiring part because you don't know what's there yet to come.
Right. No, definitely. I think the invention piece, as you talked about the circular economy and going from linear to circular, I think there will be some invention required. And this is just my layman's opinion. I think there will be some invention required. I also think that there can be sort of an over-reliance on invention, because as you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of things from other domains that can be brought in quickly and easily to sort of help solve the problem. This multi-solving concept, I like it because it leaves room for invention, which is innovative, but also new applications of existing things, which can also be innovative.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that would be something I think we should, as an economy, push a lot more. I think we can learn so much from natural concepts and systems that you know, like I think it's the field called biomimicry, if I remember correctly, that where you, well, that's really copying natural mechanics of systems.
Right, like the gecko, I think the gecko tongue, maybe someone has sort of created an artificial version of that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And also then the materials that you can use from it that are sometimes stronger and better and more efficient than what we are currently using.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards can just easily flow again into nature. So yeah, I think those are really important elements. And you can, of course, then apply this to all different sectors where I think new inventions can have tremendous effects. But also one of my colleagues and managers oftentimes says, let's not always reinvent the wheel.
Exactly.
It's finding a balance. And I like the point about relying too much on inventions, because it's a very good excuse to say, well, in the future, we'll invent ourselves out of our problems, which, you know, it makes life, of course, very, very easy. But first of all, I think it hinders innovation and inventions, just saying that.
Right.
And second of all, I think it requires permanent and continuous improvements in a parallel direction that we need to follow to get somewhere successfully, just allowing for the rebound effect, right? So if you invent something, it improves brings a lot of improvements, but then through those improvements, it creates a lot, again, a lot more activity and traction. And then you maybe are back at the same point or even worse in things, depending on your perspective. So only alone for the rebound effect already of inventions, I think we need to also work on continuous improvements and never try to rely on future inventions that we don't have yet.
Yeah, no, that's well said. I think innovation, like I said, I think it has room for both. And I love the way you positioned it there. And invention is kind of the cool, fun, interesting, sexy piece that gets people prizes and all sorts of things. I often wonder if there should be a Nobel Prize for reapplication. You know what I mean?
So yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah.
These domains are so siloed and people continue to get rewarded through the highest levels for their solutions in these silos. There's a prize for this, a prize for that, a prize for mathematics, all those other things. But I think there's probably an opportunity for us to be more rewarding of cross-domain reapplications that deliver unique solutions. No invention required.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd second that. And if anywhere they will, how did you call it? A reapplication, a Nobel Prize. Yeah. If anywhere they will allow it, it's probably going to be in Scandinavia. So,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe just pitch the idea. Who knows what
Yeah, comes there out we go. Yeah, I've got one signature on my petition already. I've got yours. So, all right. I love the way you think about the circular versus linear economy. One thing that has always sort of complicated that model for me is the fact that we are moving from national and regional economies to a global economy. So as we're making that transition from, like, you know, a North American economy, a European economy, an Asian economy to a truly global economy, that definition of circular kind of almost becomes almost a third dimension in the whole picture. Because if my global economy moves goods and services and parts all around the world as part of it, is there room in that model for, you know, kind of this global viewpoint?
Yeah, it's a good point. I've seen also like terms like globalization.
Yeah.
You know, this is a brilliant term. I really love it. To be honest, I don't know. I think that's a little bit the shortest answer, because that's remains to be seen, I think, whether this system will take it and whether there will be this globalization where you can combine both worlds probably. But I think that there must be room to some extent for it. I don't think we can go back to a purely local world. I think we are too many people. We have too many cities. There's just the demand scales became too wide.
Yeah.
It's almost like we got locked in a certain way. It's like, I compare it sometimes to the agricultural revolution, where after a few generations, and even if you had a brilliant mind come up and say, hey, this is not working out for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
Let's try to go back to a nomad lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah, wouldn't have been possible. And I see ourselves in a similar situation right now. But I do think that globalization will have also a lot of advantages from the circular economy. If you look at, for example, companies right now that struggle with supply and resilience issues because they were going too global and too complex supply chains, getting local supply lines and local activities build up and local synergies can actually further improve their case.
Yeah.
So I think circularity and local activity can really come very well into play for globally acting companies and organizations. But yeah, that would be definitely one element. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I like that a lot. As you were describing it, I can almost imagine almost a network of circles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of trying to make the entire world circular.
Yeah. And also, yeah, no, thanks. My point came back that the entire world circular, in a sense, a global economy also provides more options for matching resources, which is a big problem right now. If you have 20 would be still small scale, but no matter what number of trucks filled with one and the same resource, in the past they have still been put to landfills, because where can you match them to the right buyer, right? And in the Netherlands, there's, for example, Access Material Exchange, which basically provide a dating platform for materials. And the more global that those platforms become, the more you can then really link and match those different the demand and supply of secondary resources, making that more efficient and allowing these circles to become also more competitive and more efficient in that sense, and not have only every 10th secondary load find a buyer and or needer.
Right.
But make it possible that every secondary resource to some extent finds the next person who can get value out of it. Those are just a few ideas, I think, where the circular economy cannot have solved, to stay within our vocabulary.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it a lot. I mean, it's just such a simple model for a complex concept. That's why I like the circular economy sort of framework, because it's very easy, especially in the world of innovation and in value chain work. People build complex models for these complex concepts. And when you have a complex model, you know, you have to spend time just understanding the model, you know, yeah. Lean, Six Sigma, you know, you're going through all these trainings for all these things just to learn the process.
Yeah.
And you haven't really started working on the problem yet.
Yeah.
And so that's why I love this circular economy concept, is because I have the visual, the butterfly visual is great. That's in my head. And now I can start talking about the problem and getting right to the challenge. And I think the globalization of this global economy and, you know, just what you said, the opportunity to sort of, you know, match these things and create markets that are more efficient for, you know, the secondary things. I think that's an easy thing to wrap my head around as you're talking about a circular economy. So I really love that it's a very complex concept, you know, getting things that are mined in Madagascar to, you know, Brazil. Mm-hmm. It's a complex thing, but the concept of, okay, well, there's too much of this here and not enough of this there. That's an easy thing to start a conversation around.
Yeah.
So I really love the elegance of the model.
Yeah.
Do you have any sort of advice for innovators or people who consider themselves innovators and want to be thoughtful in this space?
Yeah, I think one I've already mentioned to some extent is trying to get more inspired by what nature has to offer. All the tricks and concepts and structures, it's so impressive. The more you read about it, right, the more ideas already come by just looking at it.
Yeah.
I think that would be definitely one. Then also, maybe at a personal level also, I think... I've seen that not enough at the moment, especially is letting criticism and also negative, especially negative feedback, enable people to let them criticize you and give negative feedback. Because in the end, that's more or less at a personal level one of the main conditions for innovation, I think. So being open to that, don't be too critical with yourself as well, because otherwise it will hinder yourself creating too much stress and stuff like that. But it can be such a powerful resource, I think. And if you are able to, first of all, allow it, but then also don't take yourself too serious so that people are actually willing and comfortable with giving you feedback, then I think you can really, that will help you innovate yourself and reinvent yourself all the time, basically. And it's very powerful and quite a beautiful thing to think about. And why I said that I'm missing that sometimes at the moment is the current situation surrounding COVID-19. What frustrates me almost the most about the whole situation is that there's almost no middle ground anymore. There's only two worlds. And as soon as you have some mild statement in either one or the other direction, as much, you can be as much in the middle as or neutral as you want, you immediately get pushed into one direction. And that's... that's on a personal level anymore, right? But it's at a global level. But I think it's the same situation, because people don't allow criticism and they take it personal as well. So yeah, being aware of confirmation biases and being aware of how powerful feedback and criticism can be is at a personal and a societal level, I think, a very important element that we need to be aware of at all times. That would be my second advice.
That's great. I'm going to take that advice and I'm trying to apply it myself. I love that. I also love that your definition of innovation not only applies to systems, processes, business models, but as you shared in your advice, it applies to individuals and society, which I think is really important. Again, I love models that are flexible and reapplicable. So thank you for that. I really appreciate you sharing those thoughts. Anything else you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I guess with the... to also briefly dive into the topic that is really one of my the heart topic. No, I like close to my heart. To my heart is also innovating education, which is also a big part of what we're doing. He had at my company in the Netherlands in change. My company, the company I work for.
You should feel a sense of ownership.
So what we do a lot is actually trying to bring innovation and ideas and inspiration within the field of education and learning and training and those fields, which I think is very important. That that's really something also where I which shaped myself, like always trying to, you know, already as a student and later on as a professional, always trying to question the existing structures. And I think that within our education system, there's really, I mean, again, we've come a very long way, and it's amazing what we're able to teach people.
Right.
But it's, we sometimes say here that it's too much about the teaching and too little about the learning.
So, oh, that's great. I love that.
Yeah. It's creating the right atmosphere that people want to learn and create, using different approaches and not only theory and also sometimes the amount of things that we expect from people, you know. Instead of just letting them do and try out, which they will probably remember for the rest of their life, and the theory, or 90% of the theory, they might forget.
Mm.
That's just a few thoughts that I wanted to also raise, because I think that's really in a field where I think we can improve a lot, especially in the field of economics and business, where I have my background from.
Mm.
You know, on the one hand, coming up with new topics, so that's more the, I guess, the invention field, inventing new curricula,
right,
around modern topics, be it sustainable business, be it social entrepreneurship, or circular economy within curricula. And on the other hand, also the approach. So we work here a lot with, you know, learning by doing. People, you can ask them 10, 20, 30 years after they have played any board game or serious game, they will remember, which is truly, truly amazing sometimes. And it oftentimes really energizes people.
Right.
I remember very vividly when I joined InChange, my first project was going around Europe to market our new business simulation, the circular business simulation we have developed.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing how, you know, people come in the morning, arrive to a training for, which is the full day, you know, they have other things to do. They have other obligations. They might be stressed. They have no clue what to expect, really. They are with different people in the room. They have no clue who they are. And then, you know, seeing them go from initial frustration, also because the simulation is so new to them and they don't know where to find stuff and what things mean, you know, circular economy, some might not even be always their main concept.
Yeah.
And then going from this initial frustration towards, you know, some then curiosity and then enthusiasm, pure enthusiasm and joy when they crack the nuts in the end. That's really brilliant. So here I'm copying I really like the journey explained with this, you know, initial frustration,
right,
curiosity and enthusiasm that a colleague of mine once explained. But I think that's really brilliant, and it leaves people with more energy at the end of a full day of work and socializing and new topics.
Mm.
But they leave with energy, and I think those techniques and that approach are really call on every learning and development manager and every professor to bring in more of those innovative approaches and topics into the curricula and programs that we have out there for people to learn in the most impactful and fun way possible.
I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. You can hear the enthusiasm and the energy in your voice as you describe kind of witnessing this and the passion you have for it. Education is so critical, and the distinction of learning versus teaching is an important one, because this is part of what I was taking away from what you said. But I think as a society, we've somehow equated the education system with learning.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you can learn is by being taught in a classroom where you receive this degree, a master's in ABC or a PhD in XYZ or what have you. And I always think back to a quote from Mark Twain where he said he never let his schooling interfere with his education. There's just so many ways to learn things. And most of them, when you take a step back from the traditional education system, which does great things, when you take a step back from that and look at the other ways people learn, they're almost all experiential.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm a musician. You know, I learned to play the piano by playing the piano, learned to sing by singing. You know, those environments, you learn the theory along the way, but it's in the context of what you're doing. And I think what you're describing, the simulation driven, the sort of, you know, bringing the knowledge and the experience together at the moment of need to create that frustration and curiosity that will drive the enthusiasm.
Yeah.
I think a lot of what you learn in school in a curriculum, people approach it from a, okay, this is the next thing I need to do to get my degree.
Yeah.
When people have a problem or companies have a problem and you bring the solution wrapped in an experiential model, I think, you know, that passion that gets me excited to think about that you guys are bringing that to companies and universities to augment their, you know, the curriculum or their standard sort of training programs internally. So I'm glad you brought that up because I agree that is much needed in the world.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I think we're on the same page there.
Yeah. So that is what I call violent agreement.
I like how you're adding words to our vocabulary today.
yeah, exactly. I've got the one language, but I'm trying to add more words to that one.
Nice.
Well, it's been such an enjoyable time, Noah. I really appreciate you making the time, you know, in Europe, the end of your day, to chat with me and to share some thoughts with our listeners. And it's been educational and inspiring. And I really appreciate you making the time.
Thanks, Jared. It's been a great pleasure. And again, thanks a lot for having me. And have a great day.
All right. Take care. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this week's show. You can drop us a line on Twitter at OutlastLLC. OutlastLLC, or follow us on LinkedIn where we're Outlast Consulting. Until next time, keep innovating, whatever that means.